little bit about this process before and kind of what goes into it. I want to kind of go through and just explain and do a little refresher on what really happens with these. I have to do that for myself every year. I think it's perfectly justifiable to do that for everybody else to see kind of what goes on and what this process is all about. As you know, really, what this program was developed for was to try to give a chance to compare animals, particularly for commercial producers that might be interested in evaluating bulls from two different breeds, and determining the genetic merit of those bulls when mated to their third, hypothetically third breed, what the genetic merit of the bulls of two different breeds would be when their EPDs of those two bulls are in calculated on a different system. So basically, this process has been done since 1993, really a preliminary trial, probably a little bit before that, and used to account for differences in the EPD base in the genetic evaluation of each breed involved. And it basically uses the data that's been collected since 1970 or so at the U.S. Meow Research Center to estimate breed differences on sires that have EPDs in the industry, and then take the differences of those sires in the industry and relative to the differences we predict for them using the U.S. Meow Research data to adjust for breed differences and try to fix this problem of having a different base for each breed involved. Okay. So the first step in the process is to just try to solve for breed of sire solutions. This is a simple model in general for us as animal breeders anyway, to try to determine what the breed of sire effect is for each of these animals. I'll get into this in a minute right now. This did change a bit this year to accommodate the new GPE structure, and I'll go into a little more detail here when we get up to that point. After that, each year I contact the breed associations themselves, and they send me the EPDs on the sires that we have sampled from their different breeds since the beginning of the GPE project. And we use those EPDs on the bulls that were in our system to adjust these breed of sire solutions to reflect the current base of the breeds themselves. And that's done using this equation right here. Talk you through this. Essentially, the adjusted difference between the breeds is equal to this breed of sire solution I said that we estimate at U.S. mark, divided by a B, a regression coefficient, which explains the fraction of the EPD expressed in U.S. mark phenotypes. So basically, all I'm saying by that is that our environment at the Meat Animal Research Center is a little bit different, probably, than the environment in terms of basic seed stock cattle production. This B is used to take the breed of sire solution that we calculate at the center and transform it into the scale that the EPDs are reflected on. So, for instance, most of our yearling weight data comes from steers and heifers rather than bulls and heifers like you might see in a typical seed stock case. And for yearling weight, as you'll see on this next slide, this B is a little bit greater than 1, partly because we see a little bit more variation, I think, in our records at the Meat Animal Research Center on these fed steers fed on a corn diet than what you might see on bulls in a typical situation in a seed stock producer for the EPDs that are being calculated by the breed association. This B scales our data, our differences, down to the differences that you might expect to see in a typical data set for breeding for EPDs. We then take and adjust what we get to the EPDs of the bulls that we sampled. Obviously, the 1970 Angus that we sampled is not the same as the Angus that you might see typically in a sample today. And basically, we compute a weighted average depending on how much of our data came from those old bulls versus how much of our data came from those newer bulls to reflect how much different the EPD is on average in the data set that we have relative to the current non-parent average, which would be for 2007, of the breed association. Okay. This is just an example of these bees for growth traits that were used this year. As you can see, in general, birth weight, milk, and yearling weight, we have a little more variation on center than you might expect in a typical seed stock population, and a little bit less variation in weenie weight relative to seed stock. That's been fairly typical over the last few years. I don't know that we have a hypothesis for why all of those things are happening, but it seems to be holding steady when we try to re-estimate this. Followed that, we basically now had a breed of sire difference for those breeds themselves, adjusted for the average EPD. The next step is to compute an adjustment factor so that commercial producers interested in comparing bulls can calculate based on that difference. And all that is done to do that is to make an adjustment factor for the breed differences relative to what their current average EPD is, okay? And that's adjusted then to an Angus base. So Angus is kind of a zero on this scale. So we take the adjusted breed solution for instance, Hereford, compare that to the adjusted breed solution for Angus. So this is kind of the breed differences that currently are right now, Hereford versus Angus, for instance. And relative to whatever Hereford's mean EPD is right now, and Hereford's and Angus's mean EPD. Okay? The result of this equation then is it gives us a factor that we add to the EPDs. Okay? And that's used then to compare bulls from two different breeds. For instance, bull a breed I, a breed Y, you just take the table factor plus that bull's EPD and you could compare it then to breed to bull J by adding its table factor. Okay, so long story short here, just a little bit about changes and some things to be aware of now and actually in a few years to come. One thing, as Mark Tallman talked a bit about earlier, our structure for GPE is changing a little bit to where traditionally we have AI sires bred to sort of a commercial grade dam, and then the resulting F1 heifers out of that cross would be crossed to a third terminal sire to get an estimate of maternal ability. And we had two distinct generations as a result. We had the AI sired animals, and those were used in the crossbreed EPD program, for instance, and in all of our write-ups about GP to estimate the direct breed differences. Okay. And then the progeny from the maternal dams was used to estimate the maternal breed differences, the progeny of the F1 dams, for the next step. What's going on right now, and our change, is that an AI-sired heifer could later be mated by AI rather than some terminal sire breed that's common to all the F1 dams, would be mated by AI to another industry bull. Okay, and there'll be a lot of this sort of interaction going on as we establish purebred herds of 16 breeds into the new germplasm evaluation program. As a result, the structure just is not as nice to try to do this traditional sire model, examine this sector and then examine that sector for direct and maternal breed differences. And as a result, we've adapted to an animal model approach that's more similar to what the industry uses right now to calculate these EPDs in the first place. The advantage of this is we get a lot more data for our direct effects, potentially grand progeny and so forth now contribute to the estimate of breed differences. The disadvantage from the perspective of some of the audience out here is things can change relative to what they were last year. And hopefully we're making a better model right now. I think we're using the data that we have a little bit better, and certainly this is the only way we have the potential really to use the data that's coming. So it is a necessary change. It will cause some shakeup here just at the beginning. This accommodates that structure, like I said. Heterosis is now fitted in the model. Previously, heterosis had been pre-adjusted out of the model. All of that is a simple covariate, sort of like Mark was talking about before, based on expected heterozygosity. And the weaning weight model is a maternal's effects model for this. We'll probably adapt what we do in this regard as we go. Other changes, we've added two new breeds. I want to caution both of these breeds. We do have small amounts of data on this. They're going to change in as we go through iterations and years on there, but this is the first look at both Santa Gertrudis and Key Angus right now. And I think we've got Ed and Erwin both back there, so get to see it for the first time. More phenotypic data has been added, quite a bit more actually relative to last year's update. Also causing some more changes, especially in terms of breeds that haven't been sampled since probably pre-1984 or so. And so, for instance, basically everything but these listed right here, we have some potentially new data coming in that could change what our estimate of breed effects are, depending on what the estimate of genetic trend from those breeds was in terms of their current EPD. Okay. Just to look at how much data we have right now for each breed, I don't want to spend too much time on this. This is available on your jump drive, and as all of this is, but you kind of see, of course, that a preponderance of our data is Hereford and Angus because those have been the two breeds that have tied together all these different cycles of GPE. So next to that is probably the cycle 7 breeds, and most of these other breeds have increased in the last year because of new sampling for the new stages GPE. Birth weight estimates really don't change a whole lot. These are estimates now of the breed of sire differences between different breeds. So if you'd say use an Angus sire versus a Hereford sire, this would be the effective difference between the progeny groups if used an average from each breed. And in general, these changes aren't very substantial for the most part. Again, we do have Santa Gertrudis and Key Angus for the first time on here, so they didn't have one to compare with last year. Started to see more change. Mostly this has been tracked down. I've compared animal model versus the traditional method. Most of this is because of new data being included in the analysis in general. I did find, I'm not going to go into too much detail, I can talk privately later, I did find an example in some of the historic code that had been used before where heterosis was incorrectly adjusted for one breed, and that did change one breed a bit more than expected, even though they didn't have a lot more new data. So otherwise, for the most part, this is from increased sampling or because of changes in primarily Angus or the other breed's genetic trend relative to each other, since Angus is the zero breed for this. The yearling weight, again, has also changed a little bit. As has been going on for the last few years, Angus is generally due to genetic trend higher than most of the other breeds. I don't think it's too surprising given the way we've seen this go the last few years. We don't have Key or Santa Gertrudis here yet for these two, for yearling weight, because we didn't have any from the newly sampled bulls. We really didn't have much data from calves on the ground that actually got a yearling weight yet. Those will come next year. And similarly, maternal milk breed of sire differences didn't change as substantially necessarily, but there were a few cases of some new data, not really very much at all, actually, in terms of maternal effects. Genetic trend slides, we've done this the last few years just to kind of show, you know, why we might expect some of the differences that we see today relative to breed genetic trends. These slides were created by taking the published genetic trends of each of these breeds, the 7 that register the most progeny in the U.S., by taking the published genetic trends from their genetic evaluation and adding the adjustment factor produced from the crossbreed EPD process. And you can kind of see, you know, relative to where breeds start, what's happened to them over time and why they are as different as they are at this point in terms of the breeder-sire effects that we just showed here a little bit ago. Birth weight, not too much different than we might expect. Most of the breeds have been plateauing or slightly decreasing over the last few years. Weaning weight, you see that we have our British breeds back here that kind of started at a similar point in the 70s, and slightly different slopes in the genetic trend lines have led, you know, basically different intensities of selection on weaning weight have brought some of the Hereford and Angus anyway up to some of the continental breeds relative to what they were, you know, back 20, 30 years ago. Yearling weight, even more so, we see the strong emphasis that Angus has placed upon yearling weight selection, and to the point that they're now basically, even with Simmental, Charlet is still ahead on this trade. I mean, higher anyway, depending on how you look at that. And basically, trend lines for a lot of the other breeds are pretty similar. And kind of clumped together for most of the British breeds with limousine along with them. Not too much different than what he had before. And maternal milk, again, we see some grouping of the two Angus breeds here at the beginning, a slightly different emphasis placed on selection probably here in the early 90s caused those breeds to split out. I don't think that's too surprising just based on the difference in the two in the emphasis on the trait. To the point where Angus is now nearly the same as Simmental in terms of maternal milk, pounds of weaning weight due to maternal milk. Hereford lower has placed quite a bit of emphasis, of course, on it, but probably started lower as we might expect, and basically other breeds kind of shake out from there. Table factors, these will be published. I don't really expect you to take a lot from these. The breed of sire differences are the ones that really give you the breed comparisons. These are just what the commercial producer or the seed stock producer potentially would use to add to their EPDs in order to compare the EPDs on an equivalent scale between two breeds. Not too much really to take home from these slides. They are published and will be also published in Beef Magazine here in the next few weeks. Based on a press release that we should be writing up here pretty soon. Just an example, again, how to use it, though. If the breed EPD were these right here, based on the table that I just had, these would be the resulting EPDs you compare those three bulls with by adding the adjustment factor to it. Go through these quickly. Again, the factors aren't going to make a lot of difference. I just show this slide as kind of a summary. Some people like better being able to see rather than breed differences, sort of what do they look like on a scale if you would add a sort of equivalent weaning weight to those breeds. And this just gives kind of an example, you know, that 28 pounds difference isn't necessarily a whole lot on the grand scheme of 900 pounds. Just depends on how you look at it and what your goal is for the operation and where you want to go in terms of both yearling weight and the resulting ramifications on mature weight. So, carcass trait. Last year was the first time we released any carcass trait adjustment factors. I think it's been a change we've wanted to try to get implemented because people have wanted to compare bulls across breeds for these carcass EPDs as well. We were able to do that on 11 different breeds this year. Should be 13 next year as we start to get slaughter data on a couple of other breeds that we wouldn't have had yet in terms of really much slaughter data this year. Same idea, essentially. And the only thing about carcass data is that we've generally, in terms of this regression coefficient that we used to adjust the U.S. mark scale back to the industry scale. Maybe we should get water here, sorry. In terms of adjusting the data, these regression coefficients have been much more erratic in general for carcass traits, quite a bit different than one. And not, you know, I'll show you here, that trend sort of seemed to continue. Part of the reason of that is the carcass EPDs are less accurate overall by themselves in terms of where we get them from the bulls that we've sampled. We don't have BIF accuracies of 0.9 for carcass traits like we do for some of the weight traits. Another part of that is just that we don't have as much progeny data that goes into these carcass traits. We haven't collected it on it except for kill steers primarily, so we lose at least half our data right there. And some bulls don't have a carcass record at all. We don't have an EPD to compare the resulting progeny to. So that explains some of why these regression coefficients are quite a bit more variable. They're actually better than they were last year in general, except for marbling is a little bit lower than it was. You know, I can't explain that right now other than lack of data and accuracy of EPDs. We'll continue to look at these, but for right now, instead of using these to adjust the USMART data, we're worried about the differences being shrunk too much or expanded too much relative to the real-world data. Instead, we've decided to use fix that regression at 1 for these carcass traits for white right now instead of worrying about the sampling that's going into those regression coefficient predictions. In order to participate in the crossbreed EPDs for carcass, the breeds had to calculate an EPD for carcass on an age-adjusted endpoint and report it on a carcass scale. And again, like some of the other changes, as we've sampled more breeds a little bit deeper, we can expect changes in years to come, but I just want to show you the breed of sire differences that we've got this year anyway. Most of them shouldn't be too surprising. In general, Angus is by far the best for marbling. They do have some genetic trend already in terms of selection. Most of the British breeds come in next, with Hereford being the last of those. And in general, continental breeds, although not all of them, have lower amounts of marbling on a marbling score scale. Ribeye area, we see similar things. Generally, there's a greater ribeye area in the traditional continental breeds than there is in the traditional British breeds. And in terms of fat thickness, we see the trend that generally the British breeds are fatter in terms of back fat than the continental breeds. I don't think this is surprising. Some of these could shake out a little bit more relative to each other as we get more data, but I'm pretty comfortable with where most of these are right now. And they're not too far from what we expected on getting a lot of data on some of these breeds in cycle 7 originally. These are the adjustment factors. Again, these will be published. These are what you add to the EPDs to compare the bulls. Not a lot to take from them by in and of themselves, but they will be published in a format that it should be easy for producers to use, first being in Beef Magazine in the next few weeks. So in summary, we want to continue to reevaluate regression for carcass traits. Overall, carcass differences between breeds are in the expected direction and relative magnitude for the most part. Even though the data are somewhat limited relative to growth, factors and breed comparisons are therefore likely to change in the next few years. More data is being added to the system, and I think the new modeling approach should help us with the new data that's coming in those regards. So with that, I can take any questions. And just see if there's anything else. Yeah.
All right.
Well, we are. I mean, it's not affecting directly this program right now. In terms of breed differences, we are collecting that data, and that's going to factor in terms of GPE, germplasm evaluation data overall. In order for that to be useful for this program, of course, we need some sort of mature cow size EPD from a lot of these different breeds. Right now, we have to assume that that's fairly random across breed and might do an adjustment for yearling weight or something to that effect to try to make those mature weights a little bit more comparable at some point for the sampling that we get from the breed associations. So.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting question, Rob. There's a lot to that. The past 2 years, our basic approach has been to contact the breed associations. They've been very helpful in this, to get a list of the top 100, top 50 to a top 100, depending on their size, breed sires over the last 4 years in terms of number of progeny that have been produced. And we sample from that list. Basically, we are up to about 24 or 25 of each breed in this real most recent sampling after two different sampling processes, so 12 or so per 2 year period. In order to pick which bulls we want to do, we want to try to kind of minimize the pedigree relationship between the bulls that we pick out, so that we're not overemphasizing one sire line. We're trying to get a diverse sample across the breeds. At the same time, we're trying to make sure that the sample we pick as closely as possible represents the breed average as they're given us on that list of the EPDs for the whole suite of traits that we're interested in. So, for instance, we don't want to choose this outlier that throws everything off in birth weight necessarily, unless we can compensate with the other bulls that we're picking at the same time. So it's kind of a function of what have we been picking in terms of relationship before in this last cycle and in previous cycles, and how can we best represent the overall average that we're trying to get and make our sampling bias be minimized as a result. Generally, then, it relies on producer cooperation. So, obviously, I realize everybody here, I'm talking to the choir, but, you know, as you're able to talk to people, we think it's important to continue this work, to try to get our sampling well, continue to talk to the breeders that you know that aren't here that to help us get semen samples to use in this project. So.
Rob, in addition to that, we'll put quite a bit of emphasis on the accuracy of the EPDs of the bulls.
Sorry.
And especially try to find bulls right now that have good accuracy for carcass EPDs to help beef up that part of the program.
Right.
We can kind of get that beefed up, then we'll start to look at other traits that enough breeds have EPDs for that are comparable that we can start to bring some other traits in. But right now, getting the carcass part of it worked, sorted out, is the most critical, and usually if we get high carcass accuracies, the accuracies for the weight traits,
they're already fine, right? Any other questions? I'm happy to talk this out with anybody anymore if they want. Charlie, go ahead. You mean slightly, because our predictions aren't perfect. Generally, Dale used to have actually published a table that you could adjust for that. I haven't done that because I added the carcass traits and we were already getting pretty long. But essentially it has to do with the standard error of these breed effect differences. And the important thing, and we don't even talk about this for regular genetic evaluation, but the important thing is really not the standard error of the animal like we talk about with the accuracy, it's the standard error of the difference. And in terms of the standard error of the difference, essentially you'd add something from the standard error of the breed difference to that. Generally, it's a pretty minor effect, Charlie, relative to the accuracies of the two animals themselves. I mean, it doesn't add a lot of noise to the difference between those two EPs.